So we have the opening Mishnah in Adios. Now, before we even read this Mishnah, we're going to need a little bit of background. But I'm going to read the Mishnah first, and then we're going to kind of speak things out, okay? So the Mishnah says the following. Shammai Omer, Kol Anashim Dayan Shasan, Tehillel Omer, Mipkida Lipkida Afilu Liyamim Harbet. V'chachamim Omerim, Lo Kedivrei Zeh V'lo Kedivrei Zeh, Ela Meyes Liyes Memetes Al-Yad Mipkida Lipkida, Mipkida Lipkida Memetes Al-Yad Meyes Liyes. So, if you already know, before we even look at what the words of the Mishnah mean, there's a structure in this Mishnah which we were going to see as a recurring structure in the next two Mishnahs as well, which is, we have a machlokes between Shammai and Hillel, and come the Chachamim and interject and say, we don't paskin like either Shammai or Hillel, but rather like this. Now, what is this Mishnah talking about? So it's a little bit strange. The opening Mishnah in Idios is a din in Hilchos Nida. We spoke a little bit about Hilchos Nida in one of the tshuvas from Mima Makim we spoke about last week. We made reference to that by the mikvah story, right? The mikvah and the Lifnei Iver Shiloh we spoke about. But this is a very complex and a little bit of a complicated halacha in Hilchos Nida. So I'm going to try to explain this to you. Again, I assume none of you have any real background in Hilchos Nida, so we're trying to just give a little bit of background in this halacha. Come Shammai says the following, okay? Shammai says, Kol Hanashim Dayan Shasan. What does that mean? There's a din that we need even more background before I can even say this. Okay, the din in the Torah is the following. If a woman sees blood during her period, she bleeds, as women generally do. So the halacha is she becomes Nida. The word Nida literally means that she's rejected, she's pushed aside. So what does that mean practically? So a woman becomes asura, number one, to live with her husband. She's not allowed to have relations with her husband when she's a nida. And number two, if she handles taharos, kachim, things of that nature, she makes them tame. Okay, so those are the two basic structures, those two basic nafkaminas of being a nida. Now, how does a woman become tahora from being a nida? So before she even can get to the mikvah, so the halacha is, she has to count what's called shiva nekiyim. Shiva nekiyim means she has to count 7 clean days, 7 days where she doesn't see dam, and then after those 7 days are over, she can go to the mikvah. Now, the truth is, it's a little bit misleading, because the concept of shiva nekiyim, mida oraisa, as I think we pointed this out already last week, does not apply to a nida. Mida oraisa, the concept of shiva nekiyim is only true for a zav and a zava. A zav referring to a man who has some sort of an omission, and a zav referring to a woman who sees dam in between her periods as opposed to during her period. Yeah. Oh, one second. We're going to get there in a second. Yes, we spoke this last week, so we're going to get back to this. Yeah. So in other words, that concept of shiva nekiyim, nida oraisa, does not apply to a nida. The Gemara in Megillah in Brachos Nida points out that Rabbi Zeira made a takana with the Benos Yisrael, the Jewish women were machmir on themselves. Sha'afilu, we definitely quoted this last week. Sha'afilu roos tibas dam kechardo yoshu sal of shiva nekiyim. That even if they see a drop of blood, the smaller drop of blood, they're machmir to keep the dinam of shiva nekiyim, even though maker adin doesn't really apply. Okay, that's the initial concept of Hilchos Nida. Now, how does a woman know if she's bleeding or not? Meaning, obviously, she can just look and see. But we do something that's called a bedika, or in the Mishnah's Lashon, a pekita. It's the same thing. A bedika means she uses a bedika cloth, a white cloth. She takes the cloth around that area, and she sees if the cloth is, there's blood on it, or if it's clean. So that's a way that she can check herself to see if there's a bedika. Now, here's the problem. Women don't do bedikos every second of every day. So there may be a period of time where a woman is not sure if she's a nida. So for example, let's say a woman did a bedika last week, and last week she didn't see dam, and now today, a week later, she sees dam. So she has no idea whether she's been a nida today or whether she was a nida for the last week, right? Why is that a problem? I mean, obviously it's a problem because let's say she had relations for the last week, but in the context of the Mishnah, it's discussing a woman handling taharos. Let's say a woman handled taharos for the whole last week. So we want to know, are those taharos now going to be tameh? Do I have to burn those taharos? How are we ever going to know that, right? We have no clue if the woman was tameh for the last week. We only know a week ago she was tahora, and today she's tameh. What happened in the week in between? So that's what the Mishnah is talking about. So comes Shammai and says, Kol Anashim Dayan Shasan. All women, whenever they do a bedika, so you can assume if the woman sees dam right now, and now is the first time that she's noticing her dam, you can assume that now is the first time that she's seeing dam. You don't have to assume that she saw dam for the last 6 days. Today is the first time, which means that according to Shammai, any taharos that this woman handled in the last week are completely tar, and only from today forward are they going to become tummy. Comes Hillel, and Hillel says it's not true. Hillel says that you have to go back to the last time this woman did a bedika. Let's say the last bedika this woman did was 3 months ago. Hillel says any taharos she handled for the last 3 months are tamei. All of them become tamei since her last bedika. Because Hillel says, how can I possibly prove to you that she hasn't seen dam since the last time she did a bedika? We have no way of knowing that. Come the Chachamim, and the Chachamim have a middle ground sheet. The Chachamim say it depends. The Chachamim say, you can go back at most 24 hours. Meaning, let's say if a woman did not do a bedikah in the last 24 hours, so then the Chacham say you have to be makbid that any taharos that she handled in the last 24 hours are tameh. But if she did a bedikah before 24 hours, then you can just go back to the previous bedikah and say, oh, anything that she handled before then is going to be tahar. But for the last bedikah, let's say the bedikah was 12 hours ago, so only for the last 12 hours you have to be makbid. In other words, it's never going to be more than 24 hours, but it could be less than 24 hours if you did a bedikah within the last 24 hours. Okay, that's the basic structure of the first half of the Mishnah. Yes, Ari.
Could you just never check that?
Say again? Well, I mean, again, you're not living in a mindset where you're handling taharu, so it doesn't mean anything to you. Taharu, in order for people to even eat food, that's true also. Again, we're not talking about that aspect. That's also true. Doing bedikos is a normal part of life, a normal part of hilchos nida. You need to do it.
Isn't it obvious?
Oh, so that's actually that may be an underlying question over here also. That's it. The Gemara Nida says that there's a din. Pasuk says in Parshas Metzora, Isha ki yazuv zov dama. The Gemara has a drusha that acha targish b'vissara. Pasuk says b'vissara. So the Gemara has a drusha that the only time a woman becomes Nida is if she has what's called hargashas hadam, which means that she actually feels, she senses the blood coming out of her body. Now the question is, well, what does that mean practically? Basman hazeh, oftentimes women don't necessarily notice the blood coming out. Does that mean that today women aren't Nida? That's obviously not true. So big machlokas under Rishonim how to define what's called hargasha. What does hargasha even mean? And even if I can define it, it's a question if it even applies basman hazeh. So the big machlokas, so does hargasha mean that her whole body shakes? Maybe it refers to premenstrual cramps that a woman has before she menstruates, before she sees blood. So the big machlokas in the Rishonim, what exactly hargasha is referring to, right? But at the end of the day, that bit of hargasha, that may be the underlying machlokas here. Because if you assume, yeah. Well, again, that's not the point. The point is that Nida Oraisa, it could be that the only time you become a Nida is if I can actually somehow sense the blood coming out. What? Well, again, there's a reason to check because maybe my taharos are tummy. Maybe I can't have a relationship with my husband. Right?
You would know automatically.
What do you mean?
You would know.
Oh, so that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that hargasha doesn't necessarily mean that. Again, the point that hargasha is not, it's not so clear that hargasha just means that, oh, I, obviously if it meant that, you wouldn't have to bedikas, obviously. Yeah.
Yeah, but don't, it doesn't sign off say that when a woman's about to go through her,
yeah,
emotions are very
okay, but that's true.
That when she starts going like off the wall,
so you're asking the kash the truth of Sadasha. Meaning, some of the Rishonim think that seeing Dom beforehand, in other words, what we call premenstrual cramps, that's considered to be hargasha. But the kash is that that's before she sees Dom. In other words, that's before she saw anything. How could it possibly be that hargasha means things that happen before she bleeds? That makes no sense. The whole point of hargasha is supposed to be a hagdara within seeing Dom. It's supposed to define when a woman becomes an Ida. If she hasn't seen Dom yet, it's a pre-Dom feeling, then obviously that can't be what Hargashim means. So that's similar to what the Shurim Sadesh talks about. Okay, so guys, that's the first half of Mishnah. What's the second half? Says the Mishnah, Kol Isha Sheyesh Leveses Daya Shaita. What if you have the following situation? Again, this is, you have to keep, you know, kind of halk up about Basman Azev versus Basman Agamara. Okay? There's something called a Veses. What's a Veses? A Veses means a cycle, a period. In other words, in the times of the Gemara, it was very normal and very common to have what's called a Veses Kavua. A Veses Kavua means that a woman would see Dom on the same date every single month. Meaning, in the month of Av, she saw Dom on Vav Av, and then she saw Dom on Vav Elul, and she saw Dom. Every Vav of every month, that's what she saw Dom. That's called a Veses Kavua. A Veses She'eno Kavua is when she sees Dom sporadically or erratically, not on any set or given date, but one month it was on Vav, next month it was on Ches, next month it was on Chah. It was just random. It was completely random. Now, the Gemara says, in the mindset of the Gemara, a Veses Kavua is considered normal. That's the norm. Seeing Dom on the same date every month is considered normal. There are different types of Vestos, but that's called normal. What about a Veses She'eno Kavua? So the Gemara assumes that a Veses She'eno Kavua is so abnormal to the point that there was one Tana, Reb Meir, who says that if your wife has a Veses She'eno Kavua, that she sees Dom erratically, you have to divorce her. You're not allowed to stay married to her. Why? Because how on earth are you going to observe Taras HaMishpacha if you can't figure out, if I know when I'm going to see Dom this date every single month, the same day, so I know exactly, you know, to make sure that I'm getting ready to see Dom and I know to stay away and to get ready to catch Shiva the kid. But if I have no clue when I'm going to see Dom, so how on earth am I going to keep Taras HaMishpacha? So the obvious problem with our mayor, first of all, we don't pass like our mayor, but the obvious problem is that Bezman Azeh, virtually, there are no women almost at all today who have a Vestis Kavua. It's almost unheard of.
Jews, like, originally before they were moved, have a Vestis Kavua.
Okay, well, actually, it might relate actually to what we're about to talk about, but the Bezman Azeh, it's almost unheard of to find a woman who has a Vestis Kavua. Before a woman gets married, so if they want to, let's say, for example, make sure that the woman doesn't have what's called a Chuppah Asnida, they have a situation where the Kala at her Chuppah is seeing Dam and becomes a Nida, which is a serious problem.
So
Bezman Azeh, what they generally do is they have these pills that can control your cycle. So that oftentimes, there's a question in general, there may be a way to circumvent all of Hilchos Nida by taking these pills. The problem is that they may also prevent you from having children. So that's a problem. To do it once is not such a big deal. So oftentimes what they do is, they'll give these pills to the Kala to control her cycle if she's expected to see Dam during the cycle. It doesn't always work. It's not foolproof. So sometimes you have a situation of Hilchos Nida that's very complicated. We're not talking about Chosina right now. It's a different discussion. We can cover it at a different time. It's very complicated what happens. What? Well, it's not. You don't have a choice. He's a Nida. You can't. So that's beyond the scope of right now. Why is what such a problem?
That sounds like a horrible wedding.
According to the Rambam, the Rambam happens to hold that a Chuppah Nida b'di'evan. That's not a valid Chuppah. You're not married. We have it, at least Ashkenazim have it not possible, like the Rambam, but there are other just complications, things you have to do. It's not impossible to have a Chuppah Asnida, it's just a little bit more difficult to figure out what to do. Either way, so the Gemara assumes, again, Bezman Azeh, all women have a Vestis Kavua. Why? Why do women today, what changed? How come, what changed? Why do women today have a Asnida? So what Yitzhak was saying before is that today, people are, Bezman Azeh, women stayed at home all day, they didn't do anything, so they stayed at home, so they had a normal Vestis, then nothing changed. Today, women travel, they go around, they go to work. When you're active, when you move around, that changed around the physical makeup of your body. It actually can actually affect you like that. What? This is the post here, the body Ashlochim quotes this. Yeah, the modern day posts talk about this. That's the reason why things change, is because today women are much more active and they do things. Right, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Yeah, exactly. So, in other words, so says the Mishnah, if a woman has a Vestis, in other words, a woman has a Vestis Kavua, she knows exactly which date every month she's going to see Dam. So, the Mishnah says that's Daya Shaita. That means that if I know I'm going to see Dam on Gimel Av, on Vav Av, so that I know that I can be rest assured that I haven't seen Dam the day before. If I know that I see Dam every Vav of every month, so that means if, let's say, my last Padika was on Gimel Av, today Vav Av, so that means I know for a fact that I didn't see Dam on Dalet and Hayat. Why? Because every month I see it on Vav. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Because it could be that it's Hay.
What?
It could be that it's
Hay. Again, if the Mishnah is assuming that a woman has a Vestis Kavua, if a woman has a Vestis Kavua and she sees Dam on the same day every month,
it's the same day. It could be if she's not checking on Dalet and Hay, it could have been Dalet or Hay.
Again, the Mishnah is assuming though that it's already been established that you see Dam on the same day every month. Again, maybe it happens three times. The Chazaka.
Every month.
Yes, every
month,
date of every month.
She doesn't check after Gimel.
Well, it has to. A woman has because
date.
A woman has to establish a chazaka, right? In other words, for example, let's say for 3 months in a row, a woman sees Dam on Vav of the month.
But is she in check Dalet and Hay? How?
Well, okay. Well, let's say the last month she checked on Dalet and Hay. So now I have a chazaka that she sees on Vav, and that chazaka stands until it gets undone if she sees for 1 or 2, 3 months in a row without having seen Dam on Vav. So the Mishnah says if a woman has this Vestis Kavua, so then the din is that we can assume that that's the first time she saw Dam, and beforehand she probably didn't. Okay. Then the Mishnah continues. Hamishameshes beidim harizo kipkida memeetes ayan mis yis viayan mipkida lipkida. If a woman has relations using what's called edim, edim is like the bedika cloth, but it's not exactly the bedika cloth to check to make sure it's not nida, but rather it's the cloth that a woman uses before and after the act of having relations. Why is she using the cloth before and after having relations? To make sure beforehand that she's not a nida, and afterwards that she's not seeing blood from the pressure of the eiver, from the pressure of having relations. Sometimes that can cause blood to come out. So she uses this cloth to make sure that no blood came out. So if a woman uses, it's not a formal bedika cloth, it's not the same thing as doing a regular bedika, but it has the same basic effect because she checks herself before and after relations. So the Mishnah says that has the same exact effect as if she did a regular bedika, and therefore if she did that kind of a bedika with the cloth before and after relations, you can be rest assured that she didn't see Dam before then, and in any tahara she handles only up until then is going to be a problem. Before that is going to be okay. It's the same concept as doing a bedika. Okay, does that Mishnah make sense? Everyone got the basic idea of the Mishnah? Anyone have any questions on the Mishnah? Good?
Yeah.
Okay, Mishnah based. As we said, there is absolutely no connection, living or dead, between these Mishnayas, except that Shammai, Hillel, Chazaka. That's literally the only thing. So the next Mishnah is talking about a completely arbitrary din of Hafrashas Chal. Okay, so what's going on here? So says the Mishnah, Shammai Omer Mikav L'Chala, the Hillel Omer Mikabayim, V'Chachamim Omer M'Loki Devezeh, V'Loki Devezeh, Al-Kav V'Mechtzah Chayovim L'Chala.
So they compromise.
They compromise. Now, this Mishnah entails a tremendous amount of math, not particularly complicated math, but just keeping a lot of numbers, keeping a lot of numbers and conversion tables in your head while it's going. So let's just take it slow to figure out what's going on. Okay, there's a din. Parsha Shlach, Torah says, there's a din of hafrashas chal. You have to take off a certain amount of dough, right, to give to the kohen. Now the question is, how much dough is that? What is the minimum shear for which I am chayav in hafrash chal? The sukkim are not clear. Sukkim don't say. So the Gemara wants to make this connection between the fact that Torah uses a variation of the word truma in the context of challah. Maybe it relates somehow to the shear of truma, but again, not so clear exactly what that means.
40,
yeah, so that, perhaps that's what the shear is. But the Mishnah has the following machlokas. Come Shammai. Shammai says, you know what the shear is for our fresh challah? Shammai says, if you have a kav of dough, is chayav in challah. What does that mean? What's a kav of dough? So we know the pasuk says in Parshas B'Shalach, the ha'omer asiris ha'ifahu. So an omer is 1/10 of an epha. So what does that mean? That means an epha, a measurement, right? So what? So and then one epha is 3 sa'ah, which therefore means that one epha is going to equal 18 kav. Okay, one epha is 3 sa'ah, which equals 18 kav. Now come Shabbat. Now this we have to understand the way that. Those are the measurements. Okay, those. What? One epha? No, we had two measurements. One omer equals 1/10 of an epha. One epha equals 3 sa'ah, which equals 18 kav. Okay, those are all different measurements. Okay, so we have one epha equals 18 kav. Now, as we're going to see in this Mishnah, the Machlokas, Shammai, and Hillel, they argue about how to darshan the pasuk, but they agree about the following point. In the Gemara's mind, there's a very strange way the Gemara does math. Okay, there's a Machlokas about how to work fractions in the Gemara. That Machlokas expresses itself in the words milagav versus milavar. What does that mean exactly? So we have the following. I'm just trying to draw this out a little bit. Okay, so let's say the following. Let's say you have to take off 1/10, right? So how do you normally calculate 1/10? Right? What's the normal way people calculate 1/10?
Divide
into 10 pieces, right? And take one piece out of the 10. But the Gemara is... Oh, so the Gemara... Well, not a 10th of a 10th. There's a question about, is this 1/10 a 10th of the total after I take off the 10th? Which is like a strange way of saying 1/10, or no? It's just 1/10. It's just what we call 1/10. So look about it. In other words, for example, let's say I want to give a simple example. So let's say we want to take 1/10 of a what? Yeah, we want to get 1/10 of 100. So normally we would say 1/10 of 100 is 10, right? But if you were going to give me what the total would be, in other words, I was going to add on 1/10 to the total, it would give me 110. Meaning as opposed to just 100, right? In other words, if I'm taking 1/10 of 100, 1/10 of 100 is 10. But if I want to take off 1/10 of the total after I add on that addition, it's going to be 11, because it's going to be 1/10 of 110 as opposed to 1/10 of 100. What? We're not going to get to why the Gemara... Yeah, the Gemara has a machlokas about how I can't make this calculation. So, but Lamaisa, those are two ways to make this calculation, okay? So Shammai and Hillel, Shammai and Hillel both calculate milavar. In other words, what does that mean? Shammai and Hillel both think the following. They say, I'm going to take off 1/10 of my challah, milavar. So what does that mean? The following. I'm going to take 2 kav, I'm going to add 2 kav to, remember I said before, 1 epha is the equivalent of 18 kav, right? As we said before, 1 epha equals 18 kav. So now, come Shammai, it says, I'm going to take my 2 kav, which is the 1/10 milavar, that's the strange calculation that Shammai has, I'm going to add that to the 18 kav, to give me a total of 20 kav. Give you a total of 20 kav. Now, 1/10 of 20 kav is 2 kav. In the normal, one more time, guys. Okay, everyone's following. 1/10 milavar. Okay, which means I'm going to add 2 kav to the 18 kav total we had before, which because 1 epha equals 18 kav. I'm going to add because according to Shammai, I'm taking 1/10 of the. Right, I'm taking 1/10 of 20, right? 1/10 of the total. So I'm adding 2 kav. So now I'm getting 20 kav. So 1/10 of 20 kav is going to be 2 kav. The pasuk says, "Mereishis arisos eichem." So the word arisos eichem is in the plural. It refers to 2 isos, 2 pieces of dough, which therefore means, according to Shammai, each piece of dough is 1 kav. In other words, arisos eichem is basically 2 divided by 1. That's basically what he's saying. You add 2 kav, you take 1/10 of 20, which is 2, and for each piece of dough, arisos eichem, in the plural, each one gets 1 kav. That's why Shammai says, in 3 words, Shammai Omer, mikavlecha. 2 words, Shammai says, mikavlecha. In those 2 words, you get this whole background. So Shammai says, mikavlecha. 1 kav per dough That's the shear that's chayav in hafreshes kal. That's the minimum shear that you need to be chayav in a fresh kal. Comes Hillel, and Hillel sort of agrees with Shammai. He agrees in terms of the calculation. He agrees that the way to calculate the one-tenth is also milavar, but he doesn't agree with Shammai's drusha on the word ariso sechem. Shammai said that, well, how does Shammai understand ariso sechem? Each goat by itself is one cow. Hillel says, no, that's not pshat. Ariso sechem, he says, refers to the arisos of all of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, he says that two kav is one-tenth of 20, and that was the shear they used in the Midbar. That's why Hillel says, mikabayim, two kav. Two kav is the minimum shear, meaning he thinks ariso sechem is not two separate units. It's one unit. Two kav, ariso sechem. In the plural, that's the minimum shear that's chayav and chal. What?
They each agree two kav.
No, they don't. Shammai says one kav. Remember, because Shammai says you divide the dough in half. Remember, Shammai says each is...
Oh, you only took one of them?
According to, great, correct. According to Hillel, two kav is the minimum shear for to be chayav in hafreshes kal. Now, what do the chachamim say?
When you say two kav, are you talking about the minimum I have to do anything?
The minimum shear for the minimum amount of dough I have to have in order to take off challah is any hafresh challah is two kav, one kav or two kav. Come the Yeah, come the chachamim. The chachamim say no, they're both wrong. The chachamim say, you know what the shear is? A kav and a half. Where do they get a kav and a half from? So. The Chachamim, as we're going to see in the Mishnah coming, you know, let's finish the Mishnah because then the Chachamim will make a little bit more sense. Let's just read the last lines of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Umi shehigdilu, shehigdilu hamidos," and we'll explain what this means in a second. When the measurements got bigger, amru chamishas revaim chayavin. So the Tanakhama says, when the measurements got bigger, well, again, let's explain what that means in 1 second. So now, 5/4 or 1 1/4 kav are chayav and chala. Rabbi Yosi omer chamisha p'tur and chamisha va'ur chayavin. 5 kav is putter, the 5 and a little bit more is chayav. What's going on here? So you have to understand the following. The way history worked is the following. There were different types of measurements that Klal Yisrael had. The initial measurements are called midos midbarios, the midos that Klal Yisrael used when they were in the midbar, right? That's what Pesukim talk about. When Klal Yisrael came to Yerushalayim, the midos expanded by a sixth, and they became midos Yerushalmios. And then they expanded a third time by another sixth to be called midos Tziporios, right, from Tzipori. So as time progressed, the measurements got bigger in terms of percentage. In other words, they increased. Practically, it's the same amount. It's just that the way you would express it would be different. And Yerushalmios is 1/6 more than Midbarios, and Tziporios is 1/6 more than Yerushalmios. Right? It's just a basic progression. Now, come the Chachamim. Just follow for a second. Come the Chachamim and say the following. The Chachamim say that the shear for Hafreshes Challah is 1.5 kav Yerushalmios. That's the middle measurement, right? Midbarios, Yerushalmios, Tziporios. 1.5 kav Yerushalmios. 1.5 kav Yerushalmios is the equivalent of 1/6 of Midbarios, right? Midos Tziporios, we said, was 1/6 more than Midos Yerushalmios, which means that 1.5 kav, which used to be 6/4 or 1.5 kav, right? 6/4, 1.5 kav in of Midos Midbarios was increased, guys, as follows for 1 second, was increased to 5/4 for Midos Yerushalmios. Does that make sense? Guys, one more time. Guys, the shear for Hafreshes Challah, when it used to be Midos Midbarios, was 6/4 or 1.5 kav. That was the shear. But remember, guys, what was the increase from Midos Midbarios to Midos Yerushalmios? It increased by a sixth. So now that it increased by a sixth, it went up from 6/4 to 5/4, which is more, right? So it's right. So now a kav and a quarter is going to be chayav in the Midos Yerushalmios. Guys, I need everyone to focus for a second, okay? I know this is a little bit complicated. It's actually math. It's really like very basic math. If you guys like know how to do like calc and like whatever trigonometry, you should know how to do basic fractions, okay? Okay, so guys, again, one more time. 6/4 was the initial measurement in the Midbar, and then 5/4 is the measurement in Yerushalayim. Meaning, the initial measurement for Hafreshes Challah, according to the Chachamim, is if I had a dough that was 6/4 of a kav, or 1.5 kav, right? And now that I expanded the measurements, right? So now we're saying that the increase was by 1/6. So now it's going to be 5/4 of Midos Yerushalmios. Now, something happened, again, it's not so clear what happened historically, but something happened that the measurements increased, right? Whatever happened, well, they increased by a sixth each time. by 6 in Yerushalayim and a 6 in Zibori. Now, the Rabbanan, guys, this is important. The Rabbanan disagree fundamentally with Shammai and Hillel. Remember, guys, how did Shammai and Hillel calculate 1/10? What was their calculation? Milavar, right? The Chachamim say, no, the way you calculate 1/10 is Milagav. In other words, they say the calculation is the normal way to calculate 1/10. And they also agree with Hillel's drasha on the word Arisosichem, that it has to be one unit of dough. However, the Rabbanan only invoke that concept of taking off a 6 milavar when you're dealing with midos Yerushalmios and Sipporios, which increased from the previous midah of midos Midborios. When they increased, that's where you take off that addition. Now, so we have 18 kav of Midborios equals 15 kav of Yerushalmios. If you subtract 1/10, it gives you 14 9/10 kav in Yerushalmios, and you have 1.5 kav of Yerushalmios is the equivalent of 5/4 or 1.25 Midborios, right? Because again, it's in Yerushalmios, it's increasing, right? So that's the equivalent, and that is the Isas Midbar. So guys, just to follow one more time, according to the Chachamim, the minimum shear for Hafrashas Chala is what? Forget about it. Just get Hafrashas Chala. 6/4 in Midborios, which is 5/4 in Yerushalmios. Excellent. So the Chacham say that what? Just read the Mishnah. In these three words, there's the last 20 minutes of what I just spoke about. Chamishes Revaim Chayavim. 5/4 is Chayav and Chala. That's what it means. 5/4, the meat of Yerushalmios, Chayav and Chala. What does Rabbi Yossi say? Rabbi Yossi disagrees. Rabbi Yossi says 5 is Parker, but 5 and a little bit is Chayav. What on earth is that supposed to mean? So Rabbi Yossi means the following. Rabbi Yossi lived in Sipori, and he knew that the measurements, that the 1/6 that was added, was really added milagav, which means that it wasn't really a 6 that was added in our kind of strange world of adding math in a different way. It was really 1/7 that was added, which means that according to Rabbi Yossi, you actually don't add a 6 to the Midah, you add a 7th. So Yerushalmios, or Tziporios, is 1/7 bigger than Yerushalmios, which means that 7 Midos Yerushalmios is the equivalent of 6 Midos Tziporios, right? It goes up by a 7th. And he says, for example, 1 lug in Tzipori is the equivalent of 7 Beitzim, which is the equivalent of 6 Beitzim Yerushalmios. Or for example, 1.5 kav Yerushalmios equals 36 Beitzim. 1 kav equals 4 lug. 1 lug equals 6 Beitzim, which means that 5 lug equals 35 Beitzim, which means that you need to have one more egg in Midos Sipporios because you're adding on another 6/7, right? You have to add on another egg, which gives you 36. Guys, it gives you 36 eggs instead of 35. Because again, the measurement, according to the original measurement, was 35 beitzim, 35 eggs. Now we're adding on an additional egg to make it 36. That's why Rabbi Yossi says, when you have exactly 5, when you have the measurement, in other words, again, what does Rabbi Yossi mean when he says chamisha pturin? That means when I have five lug, which is the equivalent of 35 beitzim, I'm pater from challah. Why? Because the midah expanded. According to Rabbi Yossi, it has to be chamisha ve'ol. It has to be the equivalent of 36 beitzim in order to be chayav and afrashas challah. It's not enough to only have 35. Okay? I know this is very kind of convoluted, a little complicated, but that's basically what the Mishnah means. Now you should know, by the way, if you want just to hear halacha lemaisa, anyone know how much dough, like, leaving a side, what? 5 pounds?
4.5 pounds.
It's something like 4.5, 4.9
cups.
Something, 4 point something, something. I don't
nine
know what the number is.
Cups midirah, yeah. 18 cups
so,
midirah, right?
So, yeah, so in other words, again, these shiurim are very kind of theoretical and up in the air, but that's the gist of the Mishnah. Okay, guys, we're trying to do one more Mishnah now, okay? This Mishnah is much less what? It wasn't complicated. It was just following fractions. It's really not so complicated. You just have to follow. If I had a chalkboard, it would probably be a little bit easier. But okay, got.
You could have sent one of us yummies together.
Okay, guys, let's do one more Mishnah, or maybe two. We'll see how much time we have. Okay, guys, says Mishnah Gimel. Guys, pay attention. If you ever learn Makos Dab Gimel, which I assume is all of you, you've probably seen some form of this Mishnah. Says Mishnah Gimel. Hello, Omer. Melo hin ma'im shi'uvin hoslin hamikveh ela shanim chayiv lomer b'lashon rabbah. A very, very weird way to start a mission. Says Hillel, one hin, which is a liquid measurement, a hin of Mayim Shuvin. Mayim Shuvin, as we spoke about in our shir last week with me, right with the tshuva, Mayim Shuvin, water that's not rainwater, drawn water, pasul a mikvah, but you have to speak like your Rebbe. What does that mean? What does the Mishnah throw in? What does that do with anything? So if you look at the Mefarshim, they explain that Hillel's Rebbeim, the Shamish Rebbeim, Hillel's Rebbeim were Shmaya Naftalion, and because Shmaya Naftalion were Girim, they had a different dialectic, a different way to speak, and the way they used to pronounce the word hin was like the word in, as an aleph yud nun, in. So he said that Hillel, not to, in other words, they used to say in, because that was apparently the way the Goyim used to speak, and they were Girim, but Hillel's Rebbeim said hin. So he said hin to conform with their, whatever the words is. It's just kind of really just like a tangent. The point is, the Mishnah says, when I have a hin, my shuvin, that apostles a mikvah. Now, that doesn't mean if I have a kosher mikvah, you know, that's going to apostle by putting my shuvin. If it's in the initial, right, the initial 40 sa'ah, which I need for a kosher mikvah, then I need to have regular rainwater. Once I get my 40 sa'ah, I can dump as much my shuvin as I want to. That's not a problem.
The
initial, okay, so that's the Gemara Makos. If I have a hin of my shuvin in the initial 40 sa'ah of the mikvah is possible according to Hillel. V'shabai omer tisha kavin. Anyone know where that number tisha kavin comes from? I've never learned Gemara Brachos before, third paragraph of Brachos. Tisha kavin means the following.
You have?
I know. So, tisha kavin means the following. There is a din, the Gemara says in Brachos, by a Baal Keri. Okay, a Baal Keri is a man who has an omission, not of a disease, but rather it's brought about by either some sort of inappropriate thoughts or overeating or drinking, etc.
Isn't that dissolved?
What? No.
The Rashi Kedushin says that.
What's that? Yeah, could. Yeah. Kufri should. What? Again, a Baal Keri, a Zav is some sort of a gonorrheal disease that a person has. Baal Keri brought about. Baal Keri is something that's brought about by either thoughts, by eating, drinking, etc.
Eating
fatty meat, yeah, stuff like that.
Drinking
like
hot wine,
whatever it is, yeah. Okay, so guys.
Rashi and Kiddushin Dabbeh says that by Zav, not by Baal Keri.
The Gemara says in Brachos, if a person's a Baal Keri, how do you become Torah? So usually we should go to the mikvah like everyone else. The Gemara has a chiddush. Ezra made a takana. Ezra said that a Baal Keri, instead of going to the mikvah, he's going to the mikvah also, but instead of going to the mikvah, he take 9 kav of water and pour it on his head, and he's good to go. Now, obviously, that's not a kosher tevil in the mikvah. Why does that work? The answer is because a Baal Keri, Bezman Hazeh, doesn't really have to go to the mikvah b'chal. He's not a chayvei tevil. So a woman who's in need is a chayvei tevil. She has to go to the mikvah. So he has to go to a regular mikvah. You can't get away with going to pouring 9 kav on your head. But a person who's not really technically chayvei to go to the mikvah in the first place can get away with pouring the 9 kav. Why dafka 9 kav? So the Gemara says because 9 kav is the shear of an average person's body. So it covers your body, you pour it on your head, then you're good to go. So if you take a shower for a couple of minutes, that would also work. Now, so because of this din of Tisha Kabin, that Tisha Kabin works to make a Baal Keri Torah, so come Shammai, it says, that's the minimum shear that will pass a mikvah. Why? Because that's the minimum shear to make somebody Torah in different contexts, right?
Then why do we ever, before a wedding, a man goes to
A man is not obligated to go. A woman has to go to the mikvah before.
Why is there even like a thing for people?
There is never a chiyah for a man to go to a mikvah, with the possible exception of Erev Yom Kippur. People like going to the mikvah as a minhag. There's no chiyah. Erev Yom Kippur is a discussion. There may be somewhat of a chiyah. No one's got to go to any mikvahs, and you should probably stay away from mikvahs. Okay, on Erev Yom Kippur, Erev Yom Kippur is a possible discussion. Sajigon claims you can make a bracha, but probably there may be a chiyuv on Erev Yom Kippur, maybe. But beyond that, there's probably not a chiyuv. And even if you want, and again, we assume everyone's coming anyway. So a woman's only going to the mikvah because she has to be for heter labayla. A man doesn't have that obligation to go to a mikvah. A man would only go to a mikvah to be able to eat taharos and things like that. We don't have that anymore. So therefore, that concept doesn't apply. Shalai says that the reason why 9 kav passes my mikvah is because that's the minimum shear in any context to make somebody torah. The second I have 9 kav of my shuvin in my original 40 saw, that will destroy my mikvah. That will make my mikvah pasul. That's what Shalai says. Come to Chachamim and say no. Chachamim over loki divrei zeh, loki divrei zeh. Ella, achaboshne gardia mishara ashbos shebi Yerushalayim ehidu mishushvei v'talion. These two weavers. There are two weavers who came from the Shara Ashpos in Yerushalayim, and they testified in the name of Shmaya V'Atalim. What do these weavers say? Shlosh es lug in mayashu b'sas ha-mikvah v'kibu chacham es nivrayim. It's now we pass the halacha. three look of Ma'ayin Shuvim possible to make up for the original 40 Sa'ah, and the Chachamim Paskin like those weavers. That's what we Paskin. What? That shear is less. The three look is less. What's Sa'ah with the three look? Where does that number come from? So the Mepharshim explained, three lug is the shear for the nechassim, the libations that accompany a carbon seaboard. So therefore, that's like the minimum shear of chashivas found in the Torah that will pass the mikvah with three lug. By the way, just derech agav, you see an interesting point from this Mishnah. Why does Mishnah mention that there were two weavers who came? Like, who cares? Like, just say, like every other Mishnah was like, I'll come and just say, they disagree. Why do you have to have, they quote these two weavers? The word is, these two random people who don't seem to necessarily be bekiyim in the Torah, they quoted something from one of their rabbis. And the halacha was koveya like them with doros. You pass it like these two weavers, like Shmaya and Atalia. Right? What's Shaw? Because they came out of their way to tell the Chacham what the psak was, what they heard from their rabbeim, as a result of them, you know, going out of their way, being Moshe Rabbeinu a little bit, we're koveya halacha with doros like those weavers. So that the Chacham gives a different perspective on how things are. So maybe Dov got to prove the point. We don't even know what their names are, but it doesn't matter. Right? You can, a person who doesn't necessarily have any stature or chashiva, a stop guy who, you know, a Baal Bais learns, an hour a night. He's not, he's good, he's koveh eat the Torah, but he's not a Rosh Hashiva, whatever. But he can have the capacity like him,
l'halacha. The bell shul in Yerushalayim is 1 hour a day. That is no more. 8 p.m. to 9 p.m.
Okay, great. Guys, we're going to do Mishnah Dalet because there's a very important Yisod of Mishnah Dalet I want to bring out. Okay, says Mishnah Dalet. V'lama maskirin as divrei Shammai v'Hillel levatla. I don't get it. We don't paskin like Shammai and Hillel. So why are we mentioning the Shita of Shammai and Hillel? Or really, you can ask a more general question. Why do we mention anyone that we don't paskin like? What's the point?
To see their logic.
Oh, 1 second. Says the Mishnah, V'lami v'doros habayim, to teach future generations, Shelo yehi adam omer al dvarav. A person cannot be obstinate or stubborn to stick to his guns if he's been outvoted by the Chachamim. If a guy says a svara and he thinks he's right, but the Chachamim tell him that he's wrong, you can't be like, no, I'm right. You have to back down. Shaharei avosolim loam dualdereh. Shammai and Hillel back down from their shita because the Chachamim didn't agree with them. So the Mishnah says, oh, you see from here, back down. Now, it's a very nice Musarava. It's a very nice Musarava. Can anyone think of a different reason why we mentioned Shammai and Hillel and the Mishnah, even though we don't pass about them? Yeah? What? Okay, but again, but that's not the question. The question is, why would we ever mention anyone who we don't pass like Halach in general? How come the Mishnahs just don't say, like, I'll come and say this, and we pass like this? Just give me the time. What do we need to do?
It's not Halach to say, because we have to call it in the Mitzvahs, because if they pass it,
okay, excellent. You're hitting on a very important idea. We'll get back to that in 1 second. Yeah. Yeah, so the Gemara doesn't actually say that. The Gemara never says that we pass on Shammai Mos Mashiach. It doesn't. It may be based on Arizal. There's no mucker. There's no at least mucker and nigla for that. It's not clear that that's true. But we'll leave that aside. Yeah, Aaron.
Gemara is not written in like a sure halacha book.
Oh, okay. Good. Good. So, if you had to put that into a phrase that the Gemara uses in business, what would you call that? Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim. Beautiful, excellent, exactly what I'm talking about. What is that? What is? I mean, we don't want the words to be literally. What is elu ve'elu? I don't understand. We don't paskin like Shammai, and here we don't paskin like Hillel. But you tell me a story. Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim. It's not true. What do you mean elu ve'elu divrei Elokim? What does it mean? Oh, so 1 second. So 1 second. There are a lot of explanations to understand what that phrase means. We have to go through a couple. The Nesivos, the famous Baal Pluto of the Tzos HaChoshen, the Nesivos, in his Akdamah to Sefer, gives the following mashal. He says, imagine a deep sea diver. Okay, a deep sea diver, what does he do? He goes looking for gems or pearls under the ocean. Well, so the first time he goes down, he thinks he finds a gem. He comes up and he finds a rock. Okay, so he throws the rock away. He goes back down. The next time he goes down, he's going to know what not to look for. Meaning, he'll spot something, he thinks it's a gem, he said, no, that looks like the last thing I found, that must be a rock. So according to the Sivos, it's like a very minimalistic understanding of Elu. The Sivos says, Shammai Shita, or in this case, Hillel Shita, whoever you know, possibly, like, their Shita is only useful to know what not to do. Meaning, according to the Sivos, there's really nothing inherently valuable about Shammai or Hillel. We really couldn't care less about Shammai and Hillel, Beis Shammai. Why do we mention Beis Shammai? To know what not to do. That's literally all their value. That's obviously a very minimalistic and very not satisfying approach to Elu Ve'elu. Others say, no, fakir. And this is what Aaron Yitzchak would say. Elu Ve'elu doesn't just mean that, oh, you know, we don't pass it again, but, you know, it could be, first of all, as Yitzi said, in certain situations, we could use them as what's called a sniff lakula. Let's say you have a multiple other kulas that you're relying on, so it could be that as an additional kula, or by the way, Hillel says that, Bishamai says that, or Rebbe Leon, whoever it is, says something else. So that's a possibility. But also, more fundamentally, you could suggest, Elu ve'elu means, there. Again, I want to call it multiple layers of truth, because that sounds like Fira, but the Gemara talks about it in a different context. For example, the Gemara says, there are mem tes panim, to be metara sheretz, to be metame sheretz, right? There are 49 ways I can tell you how a sheretz is tame, and a sheretz is tar. The Tosas in Erev and Asakashi, he says, what are you wasting your time for with Populim Shel Hevel? Everyone knows that a sheretz is tame. I'm going to give you 49 stars why a sheretz is tar. It's Mamish Bittel Torah. What am I going to tell you 49 reasons why a sheretz is tar? Sheretz is tame. So Tosas says, that's not the point. The point is that you have to make sure that you look at everything from different perspectives. Let's say I have a diet, I'm judging a case. I can't be like, oh, I saw this case, right? This is Rashi, this is Persia, by Devarim, right? Losakiru Panim Bamishman, Kakaton Kagadol Tishmon. What's the deal? This is that every court case that comes in front of me, even if I saw this exact case a million times, I can't be like, oh yeah, last week we did this, and the week before we did that. I can't just give the same stock. I have to look at the case individually, as an individual case. You have to evaluate all the sides, all the permutations, all the possibilities of a case. You can't just be like, oh yeah, this is the same thing as everything else I've done in the last 3 weeks. You can't do that. You have to look at every case individually. Elu ve'elu means that there are multiple layers of truth. And what that means is, in this context, let's say the Gemara says in Gittin, the Gemara's machlokas about the story of Pilegesh Begiva, the end of Sefer Shoftim. Why did the story of Pilegesh Begiva was that this man has a concubine of Pilegesh, they come to Beis Lechem, they look for a hotel to spend the night in, and they find out there's a Pilegesh there, and then they basically force her out, they rape her, and she dies the next morning. And as a result, the people from Binyamin that were responsible for killing her, the rest of Shevet, the rest of the Klal Yisrael, they started a civil war, and they banned marriage. It's the end of Titus, about Tubav. One of the reasons why we celebrate Tubav is because the ban of against marrying into Binyamin was lifted. But the Maisa, the Gemara again has a machlokas. What led to the story of Pilegesh Begiva? Machlokas in the Gemara. So one sheet says because the food that the Pilegesh was serving to her husband had a fly in it, and he was upset. The other sheet was because the woman had some extra pubic hairs, and during Tashmish it almost broke off his ear, and he was upset. Whatever. So the Gemara says which one was correct? The Gemara says Ilu ve'ilu divrei Elokim Chayim. The Gemara says that our Kaddish Baruch Hu said they're both correct. They're both true. I mean, they're both true. Either one true, the other true. There are multiple layers of truth. The Gemara in Erevin says that the Gemara's machlokas between Beis Shabbat and Beis Hillel. And the Gemara says Ilu ve'ilu divrei Elokim Chayim v'halacha ki Beis Hillel. The Gemara says it's mamish double talk. You can't say Ilu ve'ilu and then tell me halacha ki Beis Hillel. It doesn't make any sense. The Gemara says, because again, that's the same idea, that there are multiple ways to view the same idea. So just an important idea to keep in mind, and we'll stop here for now.